Can you explain why Bitcoin is such an attractive financial tool?
Because it is somewhat anonymous, not fully, and because you can move money instantaneously.
So the one thing we can count on is discovery. Bitcoin goes forward in the year 2024.
In the middle words of the Doors,
12, 11, 10,
the time to hesitate
9,
is through.
Ignition sequence start.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
All engine running.
Becca, how you going?
Hello. Hi. I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. Talking to a Bitcoiner from around the world. This is always a good time. And, you know, without dating the pod too much, because I don't like to do that, I'd like to keep these things relatively timeless. But nonetheless, price is ripping. There's a lot Hell more yeah. people about to discover Bitcoin. This is a good thing.
Oh, yeah. The tidal wave is coming.
That damn wall is about to break.
Yeah, there's fractures. It's leaking.
Let's go,
I'd say.
How did you discover Bitcoin?
I discovered Bitcoin through these two people called Max and Stacy and the Kaiser Report. That's actually where I first heard about Bitcoin. And yeah, just fell down the rabbit hole from there. So I, many thanks to those two. And it was, yeah, their Kaiser Report, like new show that they did. Mm-hmm. I was always just like on the search for alternative media, you know, a different mm-hmm. viewpoint than what the mainstream news was saying about all topics, not just, you know, finance or anything like that. Just kind of what's going on in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, through the two of them, that's how I kind of discovered it.
That's awesome. I remember back in the day, sort of tuning into RT, that's what it was called, right? The channel, Russia or something.
Russia Today.
Yeah, that's right. Cause I used to do a similar thing. And I would watch, like, a bit of a wanker, actually. I'll happily admit it. I used to try and watch France 24, France 24, because I was at the time trying to teach myself French because I was living overseas and mm-hmm. thought that I was some worldly above my station thing and not remembering that, you know, come from the working class background. But hey, you know, you've got to dream the dream. And, you know, you'd watch these, alternative news stations. And what was interesting is at the time I was working for a fairly prominent mainstream network. And you'd hear, like, people disparaging these alternate networks.
Yes.
As if they were propaganda.
Yeah.
If they were, you know, leading everyone up the garden path, blah, 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 blah. And that kind of rhetoric actually made me just double down and find even more, you know, and you'd sort of, you go down that alternative media path, really.
Yeah, for sure. That's like exactly what happened to me too. And like it all for me, like it kind of stemmed from like 9/11. Like I was in my teenage years when that happened. And then just all the, I mean, now we look back, like all the propaganda that was the WMDs, like we have to invade, like, you know, the narrative was all the same across like all the mainstream. And it was just like, I was still young then, but I just wanted to hear an alternative to that. So, and the internet wasn't as, you know, prevalent as it is now, you know, Twitter and all that stuff like wasn't around back then. But just like always kind of questioning and being like, oh, is this actually what's happening? What's the agenda? you know, why all of a sudden, like, it's just this repetitive WMDs, like, they're there, we have to go.
Yeah.
And then right? Like, do you remember, like, that time was crazy back then. And, like, for me, I was over in Europe when that all happened. I was going to school over there. And, like, we didn't, the school that I went to, they wouldn't show the scene, you know, of the towers and all that to us, you know, anyone that was under, I think it was like 16 or 17, they wouldn't show the images to, right. Which, like, nowadays, like, you see imagery everywhere, right? Like, it's just in your face with social media, like, all this stuff is just always in your face, like, propaganda's there, especially, you know, during 2020. So,
That Overton window just got smashed. Like,
oh, big time.
You know what I mean?
Big time. Yeah. And so, like, the visual stuff, like, I wasn't really exposed to that until, like, later when I came back to Canada. I was, like, 17, 18. And, like, from there on, just kind of, doing my own kind of, you know, looking for different news sources, different stories of, like, this is maybe what could have happened. Like, all the things that they were saying about 9/11, like, it wasn't really adding up. So just, like, going down that rabbit hole. And through, like, that journey, I came across this documentary, Zeitgeist.
Oof.
I
knew you were going to say that.
Right? Like, so I came across this, and then through there is where, like, because Max Kaiser was in that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this guy's, like, spitting some truth. Like, let me do a little, like, who is this person? And then that's how I discovered, oh, he has a news show, the Kaiser Report. Okay, like, I'm just going to start watching this to get a different, you know, view,
right.
A different interpretation of what's going on in the world. And, like, this was like 2011, like, you know, and I can't really remember too much of Bitcoin being mentioned in those earlier years, but definitely, like, in the 2017 bull run, like, it was mentioned more. Mm-hmm. And then obviously during COVID, like, they both went just, like, hardcore all in.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but then, unfortunately, once the whole, like, Russia and Ukraine thing happened, like, Arctic, like, they kicked them off of YouTube. So now they have their own thing. But yeah, that was kind of, like, how I found the Kaiser Report, Max and Stacy. And then just, like, so, you know, I'm just here on the internet, like, listening to these guys. And then when 2017 came around, my partner Thomas and I, we were like, okay, like, let's see if we can, you know, go to a meetup and learn a little bit more about Bitcoin and, you know, cryptocurrencies and, you know, what's going on here. And, like, so we found the Calgary Bitcoin meetup, which, like, there, it was pretty crazy what happened, like, with this meetup during this 2017, 18, 19 time. Like, there's a book that's been written about, like, the guy that kind of organized this meetup, because it turned out to be just, like, a total scammer and just, like, trying to peddle these shit coins and, like, oh, invest here and there. Like, it's actually a pretty crazy story. The book is called, like I mentioned, like, there's a book that was written about all, like, this time, and this guy, it's called Once Upon a Bitcoin Miner, or A Bitcoin Miner in the West. I have to see, the book's, like, in my living room.
Right.
But, like, so, like, Thomas and I were like, okay, let's go to these meetups, thinking that, like, it'll be educational, but it really wasn't. It was just this one guy or these two guys up there. Just, like, these are this week's, like, top 10 gains, you know, like, Bitcoin and all the shit coins. And it was like, oh, you know, invest some money in all of them and see which one, you know, pumps the most. And it was nothing educational. Like, I still didn't grasp, like have an understanding of what Bitcoin is exactly. Like, yeah, it's this cryptocurrency, it's on the computer, like, you know, I wanted to learn more, but these meetups, like, it just kind of like put us off a little bit. It's like, what is this guy like talking about? Like, all, like, you know, all those coins back then. I have a list somewhere in my phone of like one of the meetups where it's like, oh, follow all these like 10 coins, like over the next like week. And then you'll see how much, you know, it gains, how many gains you get. But we eventually stopped going because there was this whole like fraud and like a lawsuit and criminal investigation that was going on. Like the guy skipped town. Yeah, he's in.
He wasn't involved in Quadriga, was he?
No, he was not. He was involved.
You Canadians with this, and your scammers. What's going on?
I know. It's so brutal. Maybe it has something to do with the weather up here. It's like, but it was this this coin called Zumongo coin.
Oh, that sounds and legit.
It, yeah, right? Like, so legit. And the guy, the founder, he would come to the meetups and then host his own, like, you know, gatherings. He had this out at one of the smaller airports outside the city here. He had a hangar, and he would, like, host his, like, pitch sessions there. And he would tell us, like, oh, we have a deal with NASCAR. We're going to be at the NASCAR events, Daytona 5000 or whatever it is. And it's all sponsored by Zumongo coin. Like, it was pretty much like a promotional app. Like, you get discount codes for vendors and stuff like that. And we're like, oh, okay, like, maybe, like, sounds kind, you know, could happen. And we coincidentally had a friend of ours that went down to NASCAR, like, he was heading down there anyways. And he's like, I saw nothing about Zumongo down there. Like, no, they said, oh, we have a whole section, a party bus, you know, like how typical scammers are, like, oh, we have all these great, beautiful things and parties, and we know all these people.
They're right? Like bowerbirds. They just all the stack all the shiny things together and check it all out. And
yeah. Oh, look here, look here. Junk. Give us your money. And then, so when our friend came back and told us this, we're like, oh, like, we, like, Thomas and I both knew, like, something was a little bit off, but, like, you're still kind of curious to find out. Like, we didn't invest any money, like, thank God, into that. But there were definitely a handful of people that lost thousands of dollars from, like, this scam that, you know, we were pretty much introduced to through this guy's Bitcoin meetup that was here in Calgary, which, like, ironically, the Bitcoin meetup was, it was held at the casino, like, in one of the restaurants in the casino here in Calgary. So it was just like, it was beautiful. Like red flags everywhere, but, you know, you're just kind of you're not noticing them. But then, you know, looking back, oh yeah, well, maybe you should have thought a little bit more about that.
I was thinking as you were talking just then, your interest in alternative media and pursuing a different narrative, not necessarily for the sake of pursuing a different narrative, it sounds like, just, okay, well, I've got this information over here, and there's this news and information coming at me over here, and here's some more over here, and let's see if I can pass filter this news and information so that I can find some sort of truth, I guess. Like, where's the balance between these things? Where's the overlap between these you know, disparate information sources, news sources, right? And that to do that is a skill. It cultivates obviously cognition and your ability to pass filter bullshit. But every now and again, you know, you sort of we're fallible human beings, you know. But that skill, it sounds to me like it may have played a part in you not getting too caught up in a lot of those shitcoin scams and things like that. I mean, you said you never invested any money in these things. Do you think that that curiosity to get as much information as you can from all these different sources helped you to then pass filter, you know, more and more bullshit, even though as you said, like at the time you probably didn't necessarily see the red flags and you do now, but I think that's just part of being human. I mean, what I've learned in recent years is to just trust your gut way more than your head.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like definitely I've always been skeptical of everything, right? And not just blindly jumping in with 2 feet and be like, oh yeah, like, you know, whoever, this person has my best interests at heart, or this news organization is telling me the truth because, you know, they have my best interest at heart. Oh, the government would never lie to me because they have my best interests at heart. Like, I've never been like that. I've been very skeptical and just don't believe everything at face value, or, you know, the first thing that you hear, oh, that has to be true, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I think a lot, like, kind of just thinking about it, like, I grew up very, like, I guess, kind of independent, like, as a child. Like, I grew up on a dairy farm. Oh, cool. So, yeah. And I have 4 younger siblings. So we were 5 kids. And then my parents, 100 like dairy cows. We had hundreds of acres of land. And like growing up, we were, us kids, like we were free to roam. Like, nice. You know, it was like mom, it was in the morning. It's like you go outside and you come back at lunch, and then you go back outside, and then you come back like in the afternoon and go help milk the cows. And like we had dirt bikes, quads, like all this space to just kind of, you know, go play and discover. And through that, like you learn independence as well, because there were a handful of times, like, you know, I remember once it was 10, 11 summers around there. I took the little 50cc dirt bike out and I ran out of gas because I didn't check to see what the gas level was before I left. So you see, I'm way out like in the field somewhere. Said, oh, okay, well, I guess gotta push the dirt bike all the way back home. And then you get home and dad's standing there like, oh, so what happened to you? Like, you didn't check the gas. I always tell you, check the gas before you go. It's like, yeah, I know. So you kind of learn like that. I had that responsibility like instilled in me at a young age, and that kind of independence and freedom to go and explore and discover and to make mistakes and then to learn from those mistakes too. Right, so I think that's kind of where my skepticism and like not just trusting the first thing I hear like comes from.
That's amazing. Yeah. So you learned the hard lessons, like, you know, not checking the gas before you go out. Yeah. And you have to suffer the consequences, right? You have to be accountable for that. And at the age of 10, that's a pretty harsh lesson, particularly if you're out and about and you've got to push this thing, because they get real heavy real quick.
Oh, yeah. Holy shit. That, like, it's like, oh, I wonder why I'm so strong. Like, oh, it's like you're a kid and you're doing all this, like, manual labor, essentially, like pushing dirt bikes, like, you know, we also like we picked up stones like in the like rocks, like, you know, after the harvest and everything like that, the fields would be plowed. And then, you know, dad would round us, all of us kids up. And it's like out into the fields, go pick up the rocks. Like, you know, it's a lot of work, hard work, discipline. But, you know, later on in life, like those kind of basic skills and building blocks, like they really do, I guess, help you become a better person.
Totally.
And then like we were also like we were paid for our work too. Like I would say I've been making paychecks since I've been 9 years old, because my dad, like, you know, you work and you got paid. So I've always had that correlation of like you work hard, work, you get compensated for your time. And then that's, you know, your value that you're creating. And I was, you know, I had money and I was able to, you know, shop, save, do whatever I wanted with that
money
that I had earned.
Which amplifies your independence, because you've got, you know, a stack of capital that you can allocate wherever you want. And that sounds ridiculous to say like that, but you're a kid with some money.
It's like this 13-year-old. Oh, like, you know, oh, I have capital now. I'm going to go allocate this at the mall. I mean, that's literally like, that's pretty much what it was. It's like, oh, I can buy my own clothes. Yeah. I wish I was smarter back then and had saved more, but you know, it is what it is.
Again, though, but you're learning, and I mean, there's no substitute for proof of work, as we're all realizing, you know, and ought to have realized throughout our entire lives. And obviously, some people get that lesson later in life than earlier in life. Some people still haven't got it, and that's why they can't understand Bitcoin. You know, the idea that you've gone out, the job is done, you can see it too. Like when you pick out rocks from a field and there's no more rocks in that field, that's a tangible thing you can look at and know that the work has been done. Milking cows, I mean, that is in and of itself, I haven't got too much experience. I know a local dairy farmer that does it, you know, he does it once a day now, he doesn't do it twice a day. I know another dairy farmer that used to do it twice a day.
Yeah, we did it twice a day.
Yeah, it's brutal. Yeah. And it's like clockwork. The herd comes in, and that's difficult too. And being able to articulate that kind of effort and then earn a shitty money at the end of all of that time and energy spent, you know, this is one of my sort of bugbears primary producers, agriculturalists, farmers, earning in a money that doesn't steal from them is like going to be a revolution, I think, once more and more farmers figure that out.
Yeah, for sure it will be. But like, unfortunately, here in Canada, like for the dairy producers, the pork, chicken producers, and I'm pretty sure the wheat producers too, like, the government has a mafia on it. Like you have to, like for dairy, like you have, the government is the sole purchaser of milk. You sell your milk to the government the government. Yeah. And then the government distributes the milk to, you know, whoever the, you know, makes yogurt, cheese, all this to the, you know, manufacturers of the food products for milk. So like, because you have to, so you have to, if you want to operate a dairy farm, you have to buy quota from the government, which is your allocation of how much milk you're allowed to produce. And then with that quota, you can operate a dairy farm. And then you sell, the milk truck comes, picks up your milk. And then at the end of the month, you get a check from the government for, you know, however much your quota is. And then if you're overproducing, you have, like, you dump that milk. Like, it's not like, oh, you know, we milked too much, we had too many cows, you know, give birth, so there was an increase in the milk that we collected, here's an extra 1,000 liters. It's like, oh no, like that gets dumped essentially, like, because you're producing over your quota. So like, if that system ever gets dismantled and dairy farmers can sell directly to consumers or, you know, the companies that make milk products and earn in Bitcoin, like that would be wonderful. But so, you know, how the government has such a control and monopoly on the industries, like I don't see that happening anytime in the near term.
So it sounds to me like that's like full-blown communism.
Well, it's Canada. So yes, it is communism. Like the government is the sole purchaser of, you know, this good or this raw material, essentially milk. And then they decide how it gets distributed. It's the same thing like with the, so with the cannabis.
Uh-huh.
So Canada passed or made cannabis legal back in, I think, like 2018. And it, province to pro, like the province administers, you know, how they want to manage the cannabis industry. So here in Alberta, it's pretty much the same thing. You have growers and then the government will buy it and then distribute it to, you know, other companies that will make cannabis sort of products. Or the growers, they make the products and then the government distributes it to the stores. Like that's kind of how that works.
Wow.
Like, I mean, you know that Canada is a communist country, right?
Wow.
Like,
I mean,
I mean, it's like we always have been, actually. This isn't just like a new thing since Trudeau's been around.
Yeah, that's just an evolution. That's just almost like,
yeah,
like mask off. We're legit commies over here.
Yeah.
That's so strange to think about like that. Mm-hmm. I always I got a friend who's into wine and such, and they told me about some weird, I think he's like a grower over in like Kelowna or one of those places in BC.
Mm-hmm.
And like to even the import export within the provinces
country
is fucked up. Like,
oh yeah, for
you
sure
can't export from BC into, was it Ontario or whatever, and vice versa, and there's all these like, it's like trade barriers between
within the own country. It's so ridiculous. Like, yeah, the wine producers have a hard time, and then it also the same thing, like each province will have a list of wine, spirits, and beers that they will kind of accept. Because, you know, it's all, there's so much is government controlled here that it's like, I think the people would just like, wouldn't even know what to do if the government released all control and it was like a free flowing capitalist society. They'd be like, oh, what? But yeah, the wine industry, like, every major industry, the forestry industry is another one. Like the government is just always, they've completely ruined the forestry industry in this country. The same thing, like back to dairy farmers. So when my parents are like, we're from Switzerland. We immigrated here in the late 80s. And when my parents immigrated, there was over 100,000 dairy farms in Canada. Now there's less than 10,000. Like it just gets consolidated because it was pretty much like go big or go home.
Yeah.
You couldn't, there's no more small time dairy farmers, or they're very, very few. It's difficult, expensive to run. You have so much regulations. You have to sell to the government. Like there is just, there's nothing attractive about it. No. To people nowadays.
Scale and, or die.
Yeah, exactly. So like we had our first farm that we had around like 30, 40 cows. And then we upgraded to a bigger farm with 100 milking cows. And that was already, and that was in the early, like mid 2000s. And that was like, we were small. Mm-hmm. Like we had neighbors that had 200 or 500. We knew one farm. They had almost 1,000 like dairy cows. Like that's pretty much, you know, kind of factory farming at that point. Yeah. It's nothing, you know, it's not personal.
It's
like
a commodity.
I remember when I was younger. Yeah, exactly. 100%. Like growing up on our smaller farm in Ontario, like all the cows had names, like we would know them. Like, you know, it was so much more personable and just small scale. Yeah, it, like a good life, like, or I guess kind of like how farming has always kind of been done. But obviously, like even 30 cows, if you think back like 100 years ago or 200 years ago, like that would have been way too many. Like people, farmers usually just had like a small handful. So,
yeah.
But
far out. There you go. I never knew that. I never knew that. Again, you have these like red flags that come up and you sort of intuit there's something not right here. But unless you actually understand, have a basic grasp of economics, and this is a beautiful thing about Bitcoin is it kind of can teach you that. You don't see any of that stuff. you just see the government has fingers in pies, my pie, multiple fingers, mm-hmm. and they're technically ruining it. But because you don't have any real grasp of what is achievable and what civilization has achieved when people have been able to freely trade with one another across all manner of borders, let alone just within their own country, you don't see the devastation. It's that Bastiat seen and unseen thing.
Yes. Yeah.
And if the vast majority of people don't see it or don't have the tools to be able to see it, to see the unseen, mm-hmm. yeah, man, that just self perpetuating. And then it does, it centralizes, it scales into these giant conglomerates that dominate, and ultimately the animal in this instance, we're talking about dairy farming, suffers. And the quality of the milk yep. suffers, and then mm-hmm. the nutritional density of the milk, all of these flow-on effects. I got to ask, did you, as a dairy farmer, did you drank like real milk, right? I hesitate.
Oh, yeah, raw milk. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so we grew up on that. And but it's illegal to sell raw milk in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
if we were to give it to our neighbors, that would be considered illegal because the government is the sole purchaser of milk and you have a quota and you're producing it for them. So for your own personal and family consumption was fine. But as soon as you wanted to give it to a neighbor or a friend, that's illegal.
Wow. Black market milk is the most delicious milk I've ever tasted.
Yes. 100%. So, and yeah, and you know, I mean, in a Bitcoin standard type of a world, that this type of a system, you know, it wouldn't exist. But yeah. people are just so used to it. Like, I'm not sure when the quota system was first introduced. I would assume, if I had to take a guess, I would probably say in the late 60s or 70s. And I would not be surprised if it was like 1971. Right? So, you know, it's just...
Here we go. I've got it here. Canada Supply Management is a national agricultural policy framework used across the country, blah, blah, blah. Supply management system was authorized by the 1972 Farm Products Agencies Act.
There we go. Yep.
Wow.
Huh. I wonder what happened in 1971 and 1972.
Remarkable.
Yeah. Right? So, oh my God, of course. Yeah.
There are no coincidences, right?
There are no coincidences. Exactly. So, yeah. So there's that.
That's amazing.
Fiat money has ruined everything, even dairy farming.
Yeah, it really has.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this skepticism that you've carried and cultivated with you, you know, over the years, it's allowed you to pass filter a lot of different information from different sources, so on and so forth. And then obviously when Max and Stacey were talking about Bitcoin on the Kaiser Report, that resonated with you. Something in it resonated with you to enable you to sort of, I guess, push you down that rabbit hole. So from that first touch point, and I guess you went to the Calgary meetup and there was a few other bits and bobs, when did you really start to click and go, what was that aha moment?
Yeah. So the aha moment happened in 2020. And I think the same for like sort of a lot of people with what was happening with COVID, the insane money printing that was going on. And like, I was once again looking just for alternative sources of what, you know, and information of what was going on. And that's when I really started listening to Bitcoin podcasts. And I think even I had Saifedean's book, The Bitcoin Standard. I think I had it in 2019, but didn't read it until 2020. And it was like his book coupled with just listening to Bitcoin podcasts. Marty and Matt, like their Bitcoin Rabbit Hole Recap.
Yeah.
Their podcast. And yeah, just kind of hearing from other people, like there's an alternative money out there, a money that doesn't steal from you, that there's a cap supply. It's a code that no one, not one person or institution can change. And just sort of realizing all of that, I was like, oh, like this Bitcoin thing, like this is it. This is important. Like, okay, like learning more and more. And during 2020, like, so I was a realtor. I had just started my real estate career in like 2018,
mm-hmm.
but kind of doing it a little bit part-time. And 2019, I was kind of doing a full-time realtor. And I always like was, my attitude was like, so realtors are, they're kind of like scammers too, right? Like everyone that you meet, like you're always trying to see if they can become a client. And that's always sort of the motive that you have, like, or at least that's how I was taught, like through the brokerages and the other realtors I was talking to.
Yeah, that's the and, pyramid like, my scheme.
Well, totally, really, right? Like,
but kind of.
It's not for real estate, but it kind of is, though.
Mm-hmm.
And my attitude always was like, well, I'm not just going to go out there and like mine people so I can, you know, essentially rip them off to buy some property. Like, that's if someone wants to work with me, well, yeah, sorry. But I'm not wired like that. And with the money, too, like during the 2008 financial crisis, I had just started college and going to like doing a business admin degree.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, kind of learning more about economics and the financial industry and having all that kind of happen at the same time. Like, I got more interested in it. And then it kind of, I don't know, like through college, like was really into it. And then after I graduated, not so much. But then once I got back into real estate, I was like, picked it up again. And I guess this kind of also kind of lines up with the 2017 like bull run. And then getting into Bitcoin too, and like kind of learning little bits and pieces, and then just thinking, like, I always remember thinking to myself, like, why would I want to scam like people out of their money that they have saved? Like, oh, hey, like you have $30,000 saved, like go buy or go give it to the bank as a down payment for a mortgage for a home that, like, essentially the whole like housing market is being pumped up by government, banks, you know, all this stuff. Like, it's just like such a scam. Like, that was kind of my view, and having that view about real estate and housing, like, it's not really compatible with being a realtor. So once 2020 like hit, I was like, okay, like I'm out, I'm not doing this anymore. And then my father, like, he had a transportation business. So I was able to kind of go work with him, and I was doing a lot of driving. So that's kind of where like all these podcasts would come in. Cause I would drive I drove 700 kilometers 3 times a week. Like, so I had 12 hours, and I would just listen. Like, I was consuming podcasts at this insane rate. So it was just like all this information that I was absorbing about Bitcoin. And it was like Bitcoin only, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
All these podcasts that I was just like, oh, okay. And then the Bitcoin Miami, like the 2021 conference. So I went to that. I was like, okay, I have to go to one of these conferences and just see with my own eyes and go meet other people to make sure that, like, it's not just me and I'm crazy, that there's actually other people out there that think the same, because, you know, I was so isolated. Like, I felt even more isolated than, like, we were during COVID. Because I was just, like, in my Sprinter van, like, driving through the mountains, like, you know, all by myself listening to these podcasts. I was just like, oh, okay, need to go meet these people, like, verify for myself that there's other psychopaths out there and that it's not just, like, me in my head. And yeah, from there, and then I would say that was, like, when I became like a toxic maxi. It was like, it's only Bitcoin. Like, get away from me with everything else. So yeah,
I love that you got there. Were driving and took that as an opportunity to learn and an opportunity to sort of expand your awareness and cognition. Like, a lot of people that I know of that do driving and so on and so forth, they just listen to the radio. They drive around all day, listen to the radio or silence, which for my autist brain is just, it's not like, that's not going to happen.
It was podcast. And then, like, towards the end, like, it was almost too much because, like, once you kind of get it, a lot of this, it can become repetitive. So I kind of weaned off of it and I just started listening to, like, the audiobooks. And that was, like, the last, like, couple of months of me driving. It was just, I listened to, like, the Fall and Decline of the Roman Empire. Like, that was, like, 20 hours. Like,
brutal. Wow.
Yeah, but I got through that in a week because I was driving so much. So, you know, yeah. But it was the Bitcoin pod, like, just the pods. And it was, like, a good mix too of podcasts. Like, on the Fridays, I'd always listen to, like, Bitcoin Kindergarten, you know, something that was more, like, relaxed and fun and just Bitcoiners, like, shooting the shit and being highly regarded. So I was, and, you know, Monday I tried to do the more serious types of podcasts, Steve Lavera's and, you know, Rabbit Hole, Tales from the Crypt or whatever Matt Marty's was.
It was originally Tales from the Crypt, wasn't it? Let's be frank about this.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, so that's really how I got super orange pilled.
That's awesome. But you did it yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, with the help of these podcasters and other.
Yeah, but it was because I was curious.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Curious to learn more. And it was like, finally, I'm understanding what Bitcoin is. Like, what I was looking for at the meetup that we had gone to in 2018. And 19, like, that's what I was trying to, I just wanted someone to explain it to me. Like, what is it? What's the code? What does it do? What are miners, nodes, you know, the ledger, like a wallet, like all these things. Like, I didn't get that around people. I had to go, you know, I just had to do my own research and figure it out on my own with the help of podcasts and books.
Individual curiosity remains undefeated. Exactly. I love it. How has discovering Bitcoin changed you?
Well, it has changed me by, I guess I want to say the C word. I'm a little bit more of a, like, you know, a cunt in a way, like, because it's like, I don't have time for normies and their discussions about, you know, whatever it is they want to try and tell me Bitcoin's a scam or, oh no, the mainstream news is correct. And, you know, Health Canada, what they say, they're right. Like, I have no time for this stuff anymore. And it's because I have conviction in myself, the knowledge that I've gained, you know, how I view the world. Like, I don't need these influences from these normies anymore. So I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing, but I kind of cut myself off from, you know, a lot of the normie people, friends I used to hang out with. It's made me, another thing would be, it's kind of Bitcoin has helped me embrace my femininity also. Like, understand, like, but I don't know if that's Bitcoin. Yeah, probably. And also Bitcoin or just Twitter in general.
Mm-hmm.
But just having that low time preference, you know, in the fiat world, everything's like an emergency and, oh my God, climate change, the world's going to end. We're boiling the oceans. Like, the Amazon rainforest is going to be gone. The acid rain is coming. You know, it's always something that's like,
When should I start to worry?
Chaos and the world's going to end and we should, yeah, right?
It's just a constant ball of anxiety that everyone just wanders around.
Actually, no, like,
fucking hell.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Like, there's this one meme. It's like, it's from the 70s, like whatever their climate thing was, and the 80s, like we were all going to melt from acid rain. In the 90s, you know, it's like all this, you know, I remember being in the school in the 90s, it was like acid rain was like this big concern for me. It's just like so much propaganda, like, and it's just always there constantly. But kind of when you wake up from it, it's like, like the, you know, the world is what it is. It's always changing. There's always things going on, and like humans can't really control it as much as they want to put propaganda out there saying that we can control it. And once, you know, you see that the future is bright, like you want to help build a better future and a better world. And for me, like part of that is just blocking out all the nonsense and the people that propagate that nonsense too.
It's remarkable how much people walk around worrying about stuff that they cannot control, that's outside of them, that is always and eternally external, and not even like the small things that are outside of them that are affecting the way that they're behaving or feeling or whatever it is in any given moment. These are giant macro global scale things that even if you really did nail down the whole recycling bit, it's not going to make a shit of difference. I'm sorry. No. It's just not. Number one, because they generally chuck them in the same spot as we're starting to figure out. I mean, there was this news story a couple of years ago, probably a long time ago now, where like all of the recycling in Australia was just being exported up to some Southeast Asian country and just dumped there. Like, that's
the land. Canada, too.
Yeah, cool.
Like,
right.
Our Canada did the exact same thing. Great. We would send shipping containers out to, I think it was somewhere Indonesia or something like that. And we would just dump our garbage there and our recycling.
But
and
we're it's doing like, our bit, man.
Yeah, exactly. But as long as I can virtue signal and say, oh, I'm recycling, it's like, no, you're not actually. And the other thing, like especially with plastic recycling, like for a little while, because I was on this like anti-recycling kick, I would ask people like, how many times can you recycle plastic? Like people think that you can recycle plastic indefinitely, but you can recycle it one, maybe two times. And then after that, the fibers, like you can't do anything with it.
They're not strong enough. Right. So then what happens? Back to square
you
one.
You just throw it away.
Yeah, cool.
Like, great. Okay.
And how much energy and does it cost to actually recycle that initial, that initial like instance of recycling relative to how much could be saved to just, I don't know, figure out. That's a whole rabbit hole, man.
I know. It's the whole recycling thing. Like, I dipped my toe, or I kind of went down the rabbit hole a little bit. I was like, do you know what? Forget about it. Like, I don't have time, and I don't. And it would be another thing just to get into an argument with normies about, because everyone's been so greenwashed. Because it starts so, you start so young, like with the recycling and the whole greenwashing, it starts in childhood already. And it's just, And then with the climate, like climate anxiety, like, oh, I can't have kids because of the climate. Like, I'm doing my part. It's like, well, actually, maybe you've been brainwashed into thinking these things, but okay. Like,
That's pure evil shit.
Yes. Yeah. And I always like to say, or, you know, when people start going off about the climate stuff and, oh, we have to control it. Like, we can't get above this temperature and this and that. And it's like, well, do you believe the ice age happened? Like, at least here in North America, like, we were under 2 kilometers of ice for thousands of years. Like, where did the ice go? Like, where did it go? Maybe that was climate change. Maybe climate change isn't so bad. Like, you know, they kind of look at you like you're, you know, highly regarded. And it's just kind of like, well, yeah, like, think a little bit. It's not just like, oh, in the past, you know, 80 years since we've been keeping records, the temperature has gone up this much. The trust world the is science, always though, changing. Trust yeah, the exactly. Yes.
There are people out there much smarter than you who do this every day. They dedicate their lives to understanding the complexities of the climate. And you're just some person on the internet.
Yep, exactly.
That likes making sandwiches.
I'm a keyboard warrior.
Like, shut the fuck up.
Get back in the kitchen, woman.
God damn.
Actually, no, it should be more like, get back into your cubicle, woman.
Yeah, that's right.
go take your dog for a walk.
Yeah, multiple dogs and cats.
Yes. Oh, yes, and cats for sure. Yeah.
Get a lot of cats and budgerigars. Yeah, I mean, that would actually be a good thing. Get back in the kitchen. I would like to bring that back. You know, in fashion.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. I've transitioned away from I don't know, trying to do anything with like Bitcoin education to more like, oh, sandwich and kitchen education. Let's make sandwiches great again, or sandwich makers great again.
Oh, it's an underrated, it's an underrated market, you know? There's a person that I started following recently on Normie Network Instagram, and I can't remember her account. She's got over 1.2 million followers, and she just makes cool shit in her kitchen. She's got this southern accent. She's not made up anyway, and she just makes these cool little things in a kind of funny way. And they're really weird to look at because that's actually entertaining, you know, if you just want to spend 5 minutes melting your brain and not having to constantly think about something serious. You watch this chick make these cool things in the kitchen, and then her husband comes along and he tastes it, and like, it's just fun, man. Like, bring that back.
More wholesome, right?
Yeah. I like that idea that was going around a few weeks ago with the Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce thing, where she was going to sort of lead a TradFi wife movement eventually. Oh, yeah. I would like to see that. That would be nice.
Yeah, I was listening to this podcast. I think it was PBD, Patrick Bet David. I've been watching a lot of his or that podcast the last couple of months, and they were chatting on there too about the whole Taylor and Kelce or whatever that guy's name is movement. Like, if she all of a sudden now like gets married, has a kid, like that, how many people will sort of, you know, transition from, I'm a strong, independent woman, I don't need no man, to like, oh, like Taylor Swift is married and has a kid now. Like, I want this traditional life too. Like, maybe it's not that bad. Right. Like, I was like, oh, I could see it happening, but I highly doubt it's going to happen.
Well, just imagine being one of those individuals that require someone like a Taylor Swift to give you permission to pivot to TradFi wife culture. Like, that's just regarded sad. in and of itself. Yeah. If you don't have the independence to think for yourself and just forge your own path, well, like, have fun staying.
And unfortunately, there's a lot of people that are like that. They just need, like, you know, I'm sure it's like that 80-20 rule, like 80% of people need someone to follow, right? And 20% are going to be independent thinkers. So
the intransigent minority.
But, yes, yeah. The herd needs a leader. So I guess they've picked Taylor for that. Taylor. Or maybe Taylor was picked for that role, you know.
Man, I was into Taylor before she was pop. I liked it when she was country. Anyway.
Yeah, I was never a fan.
Oh, come on. She's got that first album's pretty good.
I don't know. I feel like I just missed it. Like I was maybe a little bit too old. And then I was also into more like rock alternative and like heavy metal.
Oh, I mean, so all of that too. But yeah, you know, I just dug early Taylor. I was getting into country music properly. Like around the time that she was sort of that first album had come out, I guess. And so it was like getting exposed to all of that. Cause I dismissed country for ages and ages and ages. And I think pop music just turned into such a shit show that I was like craving for like actual songwriting.
Yes. And, yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, man, I was exposed to country very early on because my dad was a huge country fan. And yeah, it was a lot of Garth Brooks, Brooks and Dad. So like the 90s country is like the good stuff. So my dad, he George set Strait. Up us. Yeah. Oh yeah. George Strait. Now I'm going to have problems.
Reba McEntire, Shania Twain.
Oh yeah. Shania Twain. I saw Garth Brooks live. Oof. I saw Shania Twain live. I saw Vince Gill. Oh. Because whenever they came to Ottawa, like my parents would get tickets and we, you know, my brother and I would be privileged enough to be taken along with them for a night out for all our hard work. But my dad, he set up a stereo in the milking parlor and he would play, like, it was Brooks and Dunn,
nice.
Shania Twain, and there was ABBA and Tina Turner. Those were the CDs that were on repeat in the milking parlor. And my dad, he swore, he's like, the cows produce more milk when they listen to music. I'm like, okay, yeah.
I wonder if you could like part that down to even like the actual CD, whichever artist was actually on, whether or not they were more producing milk when Shania was on or Tina. Tina probably a bit more energetic.
Yeah, for sure. You know. I wonder. Damn. Oh, if I only thought of that back then.
What have you learned about the world and more importantly yourself since discovering Bitcoin?
Oh, what I've discovered about the world is that a lot of people fall for the propaganda. A lot of people don't want to do their own research. A lot of people want safety and security. That's what I've learned. What I've learned from myself is that there's a lot of propaganda out there and don't fall for it. You have to be diligent and do your own research. You know, like I've been kind of saying this whole time, like don't just trust the first thing you hear, right? And it's just, it's reignited that sort of curiosity, the drive to learn more in myself and to know that that's not a bad thing. Mm-hmm. It's good to want to go out there and to find different sources, hear different opinions, hold two conflicting opinions at the same time and try and like, you know, debate with yourself, you know, to see, you know, what side kind of makes more sense for yourself and your own like worldview and whatnot. And just, being open, just staying open to learning and hearing opinions, but also having conviction in your own opinions and just continuing to learn.
Yeah.
I would say. Yeah. Right. Like, 100%. But you also gotta have fun at the same time too. So, you know, when you hear maybe some ridiculous opinions out there, you know, that's where the whole meme, making memes is the fun part, because you can't get down about it. Like you can, you know, if you're always just trying to debate with yourself in your own head or online or with people in real life, like it can get pretty depressing. You know, it's just, it's so draining. Like it can drain your energy. So, you know, I find it's also important to make memes, look at memes, follow memers. So, you can kind of have, you know, a humor approach to it as well.
You need to cut through that seriousness with humor. That's what the jester does. That's the whole point of the jester in the court. And what you guys do over at the Meme Factory and other, you know, I mean, like Opti and Winekus at Bitcoin Kindergarten and so on and so forth. The memes are like, for someone like myself, the memes were actually the thing that helped me open up Twitter more, because I, at the time I was sort of done with Twitter because it was just doom scrolling, black pills after black pills. And just seeing the humor with which these memes would just tear down like some bullshit and expose the truth in just a simple image. Is like, it's pure genius if you can get that done, you know.
Yeah, memes are powerful when they speak to truth, or when there's a kernel of truth in there.
Without a doubt, that's the Joker. That's the whole point. We had Yellow on like a little while ago, and one of the listeners, Brisket, he said, "Oh, that was far more serious than I thought it was going to be." Because you know, we sort of touched on a few things, and but ultimately, you know, he's able to put these memes out that just eviscerate nonsense, and it's just fucking cool.
Yeah, Yellow's a memeing genius, that's for sure.
What about yourself? Have you propelled any more of that curiosity? It's sort of validated that. Is there anything else that's kind of come online that you didn't realize beforehand?
Like just embracing my role as a woman, planning for the future, starting my family, being positive about the future. Like those things I've seen that change in me since Bitcoin. Because like, even though, you know, I was always looking for, you know, skeptical of a lot of things, it's still hard to shield yourself from a lot of the influence of the mainstream and of society. And like when I was working my corporate jobs, like there's a lot of I don't want to say like pressure, not while I was working my corporate jobs, but there's a lot of push, you know, step up your career, you want to move up like into management, like your career, this, like, you know, be that strong independent woman. There was a lot of that, not just like in the work culture, but then also like online as well. And just kind of once I went down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, like looking back at that, just seeing like how much of that, like, you know, propaganda there is out in the corporate world. And through Bitcoin, just kind of realizing that it's actually okay not to want that. And it's okay to embrace your role as a woman and a partner in a relationship, and to have low time preference in a relationship, like to keep building at it. Not like nowadays where, you know, with the online dating, like it's just so high time preference, right? Like swipe, 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 swipe. Oh, I don't like this person. Where's the next one? Like every, like people have also become disposable. Like when relationships have become disposable, like no one wants to put that proof of work in. And just through taking the principles of Bitcoin and like applying that to all areas of life and relationships too. So I would say it helped me in my relationship with Thomas to see, to be like, yeah, you want to put the work in. And sure, it might not be great all the time. Just like, you know, when you're trying to send a transaction and fees are at, you know, 300, like, oh, that's painful. And sometimes you just like, oh, I don't want to do it right now. But, you know, if you got to send your transaction, you got to do it, right? And then there's other times when the fees are low, right? It's the same thing in a relationship. Like, sometimes there's hard times, and other times things are all good and smooth sailing. And when you run into those hard times, it's, you don't want to just throw it all away and be like, oh, I don't want to put the work in, or this is too much. It's making me uncomfortable. Like, I need to break out of, you know, whatever my, if it's an opinion, you know, whatever the, if it's an argument or whatever it is, right? Like, you just kind of have to take a step back and be like, oh, like, what's the long term, like, in the long term, is this really going to matter? You know, like, oh, I don't want to go here for dinner and there, you know, like stupid bickering stuff that you have in relationships. So yeah. I would say that was probably the biggest change within myself that, that I've noticed.
That's so cool. That's so cool. And it's completely antithetical to the narrative of Bitcoin. Bitcoiners are just being selfish assholes that just want to boil the oceans.
Yeah. Like, we're not actually.
No. The truth like, of it is.
Actually, we want to build the future. We want to build a brighter future.
Yeah, we just want to make things a lot cooler, if you don't mind.
Yeah. Yeah. And more efficient, please.
Yeah. And not so damn expensive.
Oh, yeah.
For goodness sake. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How do you explain Bitcoin to someone? Whoever they could be. I don't know. Let's just say, how do you explain? How would you explain Bitcoin to your dad?
How would I explain Bitcoin? I would explain it that it is a, that it's a money that you can store your time and energy in, and it will not be stolen from you from outside parties, essentially. I think it's probably, I have, like, honestly, I've stopped trying to orange pill people just because, like, you know, I just, yeah, I,
it's exhausting.
It is exhausting. And like, I've tried, and, you know, I'll send people links to podcasts, lend out books, like, oh, you know, you can talk to someone till you're blue in the face, but if they don't want to learn and if they're not open to it, like, I just find that I'm also wasting my energy.
Totally.
And I tried to orange pill my father for months during 2020 and 2021. And like, he would see what the government was doing, the lockdowns, like his business was highly affected because he was in transportation and there was no more travel allowed, you know, and it was just like handouts here and there. And it's, you know, he had questions too. And I'm just, you know, trying to explain, oh, but with Bitcoin, like, no, the government can't just make more Bitcoin and hand it out and this and that. But I don't know. I probably do a bad job of trying to explain it. So I just try and stay away from it. I'm like, I don't know. Bitcoin's like memes and it's good money. And yeah, just go do your own research. Okay.
It's hard.
But yeah, like mostly, and like, cause for, you know, it's also that for a while I was trying to explain like the quintillionaire effect, right? Like the closer people are to the money printer, the more benefit they receive and the further away you are that you're actually being stolen from. But like, people don't want to hear that.
No.
So, you know.
And there's all these concepts wrapped up in that as well that
yeah.
you have to explain, and it just, it sets you back. It
yeah.
Really.
So
yeah. It's not yeah. easy. I think I go back to what Valis said on this pod once, which is just be yourself and be
mm-hmm.
an example, and then eventually yeah. someone will sort of look over at Becca. She's got husband, she's got her, you know, you've I mean, it's on Twitter, right? Like, this, I'm not doxing you, but like, you've got your no. your family is growing,
yeah,
you know, and this is a cool thing, and you're just leading by yeah. example, doing your due,
exactly,
you know.
Yeah, and then you find those people that are, have the same values and principles as you. And then you just, that becomes your new community. So like here in Calgary, like, we do have quite a handful of like prominent Bitcoiners that are in this area. And, you know, like, BTC Sessions, Ben Sessions. Like, mm-hmm. he's out here. He's been spearheading a sats market.
Yeah.
So the next one is in 3 weeks here. So, you know, I sell, I'm going to be selling my banana bread there and some cookies, you know, all the carbs. As much, you know, because we know Bitcoiners love their carbs.
Good but quality, like, you know, carbs, it, man.
There's, yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Made with love. So, and it's just cool. Like, you got to take initiative if you want to see a better world and grow a community, like, with like-minded people. So, you know, I feel very lucky to be here, to be surrounded by so many great Bitcoiners and that want to build that community out. So, you know, you just gotta go out there. And then, you know, if I had a chiropractor, like, I wore a Bitcoin shirt to my appointment once, and he's like, "Oh, Bitcoin," and or like, "Are you into it?" I'm like, "Oh yeah, it's great." And I told him about the market and sent him emails and links. I'm like, "Come, like, show up, come see what it's about." But, you know, they don't.
They never do.
So it's like, ugh, whatever.
The woodwork has been stirring of late, given the price.
Yes,
action.
Maybe it'll be different now. Maybe. Yeah, with Bitcoin's price pumping. But
I got a message from a friend who I'd tried to orange pill a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was like, what was it? What's going on with Bitcoin? Should I be buying or selling? And I just sent back one word, learn.
And yeah.
I didn't get a reply, you know.
Of course not. He probably thought you're an asshole. Like, yeah, oh, cool. Thanks,
well,
buddy.
Then, to
like,
be honest,
tell
I am.
Me what to do. Yeah, exactly, right? That's what I mean. Like, Bitcoin turned me into a cunt a little bit, mm-hmm. so.
Fuck off. Like, seriously. Put exactly, the work in, yeah. like we all have.
Yes.
Or yeah. literally have fun staying poor. I'm sorry. 100%. There's that great metronome meme where it ticks, talks backwards and forwards. It's a still image, but it's basically on one side of the tick is, you know, trying to orange pill all the people, and then on the other side is go fuck yourselves.
Like, yes, you know. I know that meme is so true.
It's the best meme, and I flip between those two things so often. Sometimes, more often than not, though, you get exhausted, as we were saying, and you just stay on the talk side where you're just like, you know what,
exactly,
just, like, I come to me when you're ready or whatever. I don't have time to explain it to you.
Yeah,
Satoshi did that back on the forums. That's one of the best quotes.
Yep. It is, it really is.
What does Bitcoin mean to you?
Bitcoin means a brighter future, a way for me to secure my value and not have it stolen from me by parasites. That's, to me, that's what it means. It means I'm able to protect my own wealth. It gives me drive to produce good value and get paid in a money where I can protect that value, and it won't be debased by the governments, the central banks, slowly stolen from me by inflation. And because I figured this out, I'm going to get wealthier because of it. Right? Like, it's the truth. So, sorry.
You're right. We're all going to have to cope. I think Weineker said this on Simply Bitcoin the other day. It was, we're all going to have to cope. Oh, no, it was Dave. It was the 58K gang.
Oh, yeah. 58K. So wrecked.
We're going to have to cope with having more money.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I have to cope with winning the lottery slowly. What a tragedy. But no, I mean, it makes me want to produce things of value. Like, when I was working my corporate jobs or being a realtor, like, I wasn't really so motivated. Like, you know, it was just kind of, especially I had a corporate sales job, and it's everything you think of. Like, you know, office work, cubicle, just staring at the computer all day. Like, it's so unmotivating and so draining. Like, it's not somewheres where I felt motivated to give my best, you know? And I know I can give a lot, but it was just like, ugh, the whole environment, the people that you're around, the propaganda that's in the corporate world is just wasn't for me. But with Bitcoin, you know, if you can find something that you love and if you're able to generate Bitcoin doing that, like that's awesome. And it kind of, yeah, motivates you to want to do more and to be a better version of yourself and to always keep on sort of growing.
Beautiful. 100%. Yeah. Totally agree with that. Co-signed in triplicate.
Nice.
I just realized you said that you did 700 miles three times a week. That's 21
kilometers.
Oh, yeah. Well, so I flipped it to miles because I just figured North America, but yeah, 100%. Yeah. So 700 kilometers. Great. Well, then we're in alignment there.
Yeah.
So you drove 700 kilometers three times a week, which is 2,100 kilometers.
Yes.
Beautiful.
I drove over 100,000 kilometers in. Oh yeah, 20. That's funny. Hey, I never. Interesting.
There you go. Listening to Bitcoin podcasts, driving 2,100 kilometers. That's. I just thought of it because I was writing down like things to put in the show notes. And that just came to me. I was like 700 three times 21. Oh,
cool, yes, cool. 21. Huh, yeah.
There are no coincidences.
There are no coincidences. That's hilarious. Yeah, man, I did so much driving. And it was through, like, it was in the interior of BC. Like, so I passed through, like, a handful of towns. And, like, I would drive, like, from the interior, like, from the Kootenays. So, like, the Kootenays, I lived out there for almost 10 years. It's this total, like, hippy dippy area of BC. Like the draft dodgers went there in the 70s. Like this is the first like cannabis store in Canada was there for medical cannabis. Back in the 70s, every other house had was a grow op essentially. Like this was, you know, it's a whole special region. So I drove from there to Kelowna and back three times a week. So there's nothing there except for mountains and trees.
Oh, I know the joint. Like I've driven from Vancouver to Kelowna. Mm-hmm. And when I got there actually, I went and bought a tincture of CBD oil. And it was pouring down rain, and you guys drive on the wrong side of the road. And so I was a bit anxious, and I took way more than I probably, you know, should have given my sort of newness to the whole thing. But if it didn't calm me down and let me sort of drive in this pouring rain over these mountain passes to Kelowna, I don't know what I would have done. And I remember stopping in some town and I was trying to think of the name of it, but they had a giant mural down the main street of all of these 90s country music stars like Alan Jackson.
And yes, in Merritt.
There Merritt, you go. BC. Thank you. Yeah. That was Merritt. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have a big country festival.
It kind of made me want to move there, to be honest.
Yeah. Hey, man, it's nice. There are some beautiful spots in BC, but unfortunately, like we have a saying, BC bring cash, like it's expensive as fuck there. Holy shit.
Well, it's like Sydney here. It's just pure Ponzi scheme, real estate nonsense.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and Bitcoin will fix this at some point. You know, we'll reprice everything. Well,
yeah, that's so. I just one more thing. There was once I was driving and it was raining as well. And my windshield wiper stopped working. And I remember, and I was driving over a mountain pass, and it was pouring down rain. And I was driving, and
you can't even stop. How do you pull over safely?
You can't. You literally can't stop. And this, what I remember thinking was, this is what hodling Bitcoin's like: driving over a mountain pass in the rain, and your windshield wipers stop working, and you just like pray to God and hold on and just hope for the best, like. That's literally, I was like, yep, this is what it feels like. So brutal.
Driving rain. And those roads, I mean, they're pretty good. They're actually pretty good. They're way better than New Zealand, but
it's a one side is a cliff that goes up, and the other side is a cliff that goes down to the valley.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. You're just holding on for dear life. It's just like, please let me make it down the hill. Yeah, that was intense. So I always like, if someone's like, oh, Bitcoin, like, what's it like? I was using that in that story for a while. I was like, this is what hodling Bitcoin's like.
That's fortifying too. And that's probably why you don't have much patience with people that aren't interested, because you've done all the work. That is the work.
Yes.
Driving in the rain, driving rain, listening to these podcasts, trying to understand this thing, just to sort of, you know, figure it out, and did all those things. That's, you know, that takes effort, time, and energy.
Yes, exactly. And that's what Bitcoin's protecting for us that choose to use it.
Perfect. Becca, thank you so much for shedding some scarce time, finite energy, telling us the tale of how you discovered Bitcoin. I think I've had,
of course, my joy.
A few alumni from the Mean Factory alumni. Is that the right word? No, like cohort.
I mean, we're still an organization, if you will.
Yeah, that doesn't exist though.
It doesn't exist. Yeah, a non-existent organization.
Yes. An unorganized, disorganized non-organization of memers on the internet somewhere. I did actually, and I'm going to say this just as a carrot, but I reached out to Greg a little while, and he said, I've already told that story. So he's like too good to come on Discovering Bitcoin. Because he's the leader of the Meme Factory, right?
Yes, our fearless.
So his ego potato is just getting the best of him.
Yes, yeah, for sure. I'll have to troll him later. I've already told that story. That's funny. That's something that I feel like McCormick would say.
Biggest Bitcoin podcast in the game.
Oh yeah.
I can't really disparage McCormick. He plays stupid really well. It's definitely the shtick. If it wasn't for his love of heavy metal, particularly, you know, like, he'll reference Pantera quite a lot.
Yes,
and I love Pantera. I can tolerate him, and I see the value, and he does have good guests on and all the rest of it. So I can't come down too hard unless he's acting like a complete fuckwit with respect to COVID and things. He takes the middle way though, to be fair. Anyway, that's a whole nother story.
Yeah. Let's not get into that.
You're welcome on anytime, Peter and Greg, if you want.
Yes, I will let him know later.
Yeah, cheers.
Yeah.
On that Slack channel that you guys have that doesn't exist.
That doesn't exist.
Becca, thank you so much. This has been awesome.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on. Discovery.